Welcome. I was going to take some time to get off to start by introducing ourselves to Michelle from LULAC, but she is not here. If she does both and join us, or even if it's online, I'd like for us to take some time to introduce ourselves to her. I don't necessarily think we need to introduce ourselves to each other this time. So I just want to start by thanking you for exercising patience with us and sticking with us. I know there's a lot of frustration that we've lost momentum, and we join you in that frustration. We had a world of, we'll say, opportunities of other workload that, you know, gets in the way, and then personal issues as well. But we've made it this far, and we are recommitted to maintaining the momentum that we gained from this meeting and moving forward into our open house, which we've scheduled for later this month, and I'll get into that in a little bit. And then going forward with the park board and taking a plan to council here in this first quarter or early April of 2024. So hopefully we can get on to the next steps and get this plan in action. But of course, we don't want to skip these steps. We don't want to move forward through them too fast, because we want to hear your opinions and take those into consideration as we finalize this plan. Thanks everybody for coming and joining us, and Mark for being online. So if you're, just to let you know, there are restrooms in this building. They're behind that door back there. There's two restrooms. We do have snacks. There's a garbage can in the back if you need it. If you're joining us online, I think, is Mark muted?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Mark, I think if you just put your hand up if you need, if you're ready to say something, and then we'll let you have the floor. You have your hand up. Do you want to say something? You're just waving. Just waving. All right. The meeting is being recorded. Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And steering committee members are may participate in the conversation. You can ask questions, talk to each other, but the public can only observe the meeting and may not ask questions or participate. We will have the January 24th open house, and that's where the public can interact and share their thoughts and ask all the questions they want. Right, so our agenda for today is going to review some of the progress that we've made since the last meeting, talk about the next administrative steps that we have for finishing the plan, and then the next steps that are touched on in the draft plan. We're going to have some time for each of you to share your thoughts on the plan that you've read, and then we'll have an open discussion where you can all exchange ideas and information. And then we'll talk about the open house and the next steps after that. All right, so since our last meeting, I'll just start with the workshop. I think Heather Tishman is trying to write online and having a problem. Let me look at this. Sorry. Okay, so since our workshop that was in March of last year, I think we all know that Marcella from LULAC was unable to attend that workshop, and so we didn't have any input from LULAC there. And so I met with who was the interim executive of LULAC, Peter Block Garcia, and he identified three other folks from the local LULAC organization. We shared all of the information that had been shared with you, all of the documents, all of the meeting minutes. I did a presentation for them to kind of bring them up to speed as best I could so that they could complete that Build a Farm workshop. And so if you look at the groups 1 through 6, there are number 6 on there, and those were their responses. Also, since or last year, we completed the purchase of the hidden property, which, if you can see, we have Heritage Farm and Hazeldale Park here. And Mark, I'm pointing at the screen and you can't see me, but it's the teal box on the east side of the park. The east side of the farm. We purchased that property, closed on it, I think in November, somewhere around there.
September, October, November.
And the intent of that purchase is that any public access trails that take people from the northeast corner up through to Hazeldale Park or to the south end of the park can be routed through that area, keep people off of that maintenance road. So it was an opportunity that we jumped on.
How many acres are you talking about?
So it's a 10-acre parcel. Most of it is regulated wetlands.
Perfect.
As well as very steep slopes. So it's zoned like it could be a dense housing, but there's less than an acre that's really developable without a lot of committing and process. Yeah. So we paid too much,
but
that was the appraised value.
Is that right?
That's just my opinion. But I'm a buyer, so everything I buy is way too much. so it has a lot of other natural resource values and futures. They have continued headwaters of Cougar Creek as well. So again, it continues to meet some of those county priorities. In addition, because of that slope and its elevation gain, it provides us additional trying to meet ADA requirements. It's always longer to go up, and so that provides that opportunity to go over in there if it's feasible at the time we start the last program.
It doesn't appear to go to 78th Street, is that correct?
Correct. So Mark can't do this, but it's 78th at the top of the picture. That you'll see some parcels. This one of those or two of those are already owned through Public Works from the roadside, I think is that future road expansion. And then there is a couple other parcels that are owned privately. I think another one of those is for sale at a low price, of course, that is have the same restrictions on it. So.
And this parcel is part of Perry Farm?
No.
It's a separate parcel.
Yeah. I think it's being brought forward is because it can create added value in regards to future plans that are in the master plan for and as an adjacent asset. So
it will allow us, if the habitat restrictions on it are will permit it to make the connection from the lower part of the farm to the upper part of the farm without having a trail going up the existing farm road. That was why it was intriguing to us when their realtor approached us about the property. The other parcel that is for sale, I called them last year sometime. It's on the east side of the right of way, so it's all blackberry right now, and they want more than we can board and claim to have, you know, commercial interest in it.
They're new to the county, eh?
No, I'm not new. I just told them.
No, I meant the people who think it has commercial value.
I told them if they wanted to talk, call me back.
So we've also provided updates on the plan progress and what we've been working on to the Heritage Farm Advisory Team. Over the last year, and also made a presentation to the Historic Preservation Commission as well. And then Rocky, do you want to talk about the next bullet with the conservation covenant?
Yeah, so I think the end of 22, council had wanted to investigate putting some sort of conservation covenant or easement across the property. That was reviewed in 23, and we went back to council in November with a draft conservation covenant that would provide that layer of protection over the farm. It was by the county, to the county, for the county. We didn't have a third party in being, so there was a potential risk in the future that a future council could just remove it. I asked us to investigate some alternatives, a third party, another program. So we are looking at that right now and hope to go back this quarter to council with a revised plan to again put that conservation covenant over it.
Concept of permanency doesn't seem to be coming in.
No, that's why we're,
yeah.
It wasn't moved forward, it's sure, because there was that still risk. So that's where we're looking at potentially a legacy land covenant over it, which would provide an RCW protection, a conversion requirement if there was to be a change. There's there's an open lot associated with how to do that. And it's consistent. We do that for farming and forest land as well as vegetable preservation, which again is consistent with what the site used for. So as such, that we're having that reviewed, we'll bring back the options or preferred options to council and hopefully get this, that covenant and your easement recorded before this plan is adopted. So that'll be one of those things that we hope to have in the file book.
Sure, sure.
As another emblem on the old
remote. Yes, right.
Yes, ma'am.
So that was something that I was pushing pretty hard. Is that something you can keep us updated on? I would love to know, like, when you have, I didn't realize that went before council. I'd love to see whatever materials you send out, if you could let us know when that.
Sure. Would you like to see what we presented already, or would you like to see the future?
So I would like to see.
You can, we can give you a, we can send you a link to the council record. It's in the council record what they reviewed. That's the public record. And we were only made aware of this effort late in the game, property and.
So there's a lot of work with
attorney.
Prosecuting attorney's office.
Yeah.
And then it went to our attorney, and then we got involved at the immigration community, the actual covenant and structuring that. So I can get you, I can't remember if I have an actual staff report, but we have a copy of the draft covenant. Please note that it may appear yellow, and what we get approved will be blue. So there could be changes for the next iteration, just as a heads up, at least it's a foundation. So we'll I'll make sure, if I don't think I did that this morning, but I'll get you the covenant if it's not already in that record, then the link to the
And that's for the past one.
For the past one.
For the upcoming one.
When we have something that's ready to go to council, we'll let you know and give you a copy of whatever that is.
We plan on, I was addressed later, is when we go to the park board, we go to council for this plan, and we can include that as one of the tasks we're going to let you know in case you want to participate.
Awesome. Thank you very much. David, will you send that link to all of us?
I'm going to send it to. I'll just,
it'll go out to everyone.
Yeah, I'll put it together and then she can send it out.
So just to clarify, that third party is that you're thinking of when you said something about legacy.
So
is that the third party that you're talking about?
No. So a third party would be Christine Perry with the existing conservation covenant as a party. The Conservation Futures Program, that's a county-run program, is managed by RCWs, would be that alternative. That's the other alternative we're looking at, to be a conservation covenant through that program. And we have a manual that identifies the process. There's a standard process. We're working with other private property owners to transfer conservation covenants, essentially removing their development rights from farmland. It's essentially say that it has to be in its current condition as farm ag, consistent with the master plan in the future. And then if with that system, it would actually put an additional anchor. So if we just had a covenant, conservation covenant, and Christine was the holder of that, and you agreed to remove that covenant and then what to cancel is removed. With the conservation futures, conservation covenant on it, legacy lands, conservation covenant on it, there's RCW rules that you have to follow, and you wouldn't be able to remove it. It's there. You'd have to remove it, you have to buy another piece of property and transfer that over to it. So there's a conversion process, which makes it, I think, from my perspective, even more permanent in regards to the concerns that were being communicated about the perception that it was going to be sold for whatever other thing it is.
other questions about that?
That covenant would be the third layer of protection, because we have a master plan that stipulates what needs to be done, and that went through a public process and was adopted. We're going to have the sustainability plan, which has gone through a public process and hopefully will be adopted. And then if we have the conservation easement or conservation covenant, there's sort of three layers of protection. Oh, and the historic overlay.
I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, would protect.
I'm just trying to get the lines of
that. Oh, so it's already done?
Yeah.
So there's a lot that keeps Heritage Farm sort of anchored up this property. So
there's no one that we can see in the meeting that's trying to get on, but we'll keep an eye out.
Okay.
Were there any other questions or conversation about the covenant, the easement? What are they doing?
I'm curious. We have to talk about it now, but I'm curious how it interfaces with what's in the plan, and if there's any kind of, I don't know, things to be aware of about what can and can't happen. We can address that later.
Yeah, in regards to a covenant, or
would there be any restrictions possibly that could impact what the plan illustrates?
Oh, good question. So, if a future master plan came through and said it was going to do something that wasn't consistent with that RCW, then that would be a no-go option. So there, that element. But all the things that are listed in the master plan right now, and in the company's master plan, and it's been discussed in the sustainability plan, would be consistent, from my understanding of the legacy land program. And the issue, the core thing that would be is that commercial use of the property would not be allowed. So I couldn't have a concessionaire come in and operate the farm for profit. So that would be a big thing. A lot of times with legacy lands is the example they always use is a boat ramp in a marina. You know, you put a boat ramp and a marina on there. It's fine and dandy for county owns it, but if they send it out to an operator through a lease or a concessionaire agreement, you can't do that. Or a golf course where you're like trying out or whatever.
Anybody else? Oh, you look like you had something you wanted to say. Or
no, I just thinking I'd be quiet. Shut you out.
All right. Well, the last bullet is that we developed the draft sustainability plans here, or that you have. So our next steps, I'm just going to go through some administrative steps first, and then we'll go into a little bit more into the steps that are involved implementing the plan. So we need your comments by January 5th, which is Friday. We're going to review those comments, which we've already received some from a few folks, but we do need written comments, just not the things that you say out loud here in the meeting, but actual email or some way of you communicating those to me. We intend to post the draft plan on January 17th, which will be a week before the open house. It's scheduled for January 24th. That'll be from 6 to 8 p.m. at Minnehaha Elementary School. We will have a public comment period that'll start on the day that the plan is posted, and then it will end on February 23rd. That'll give us around a little over 30 days total. For folks to make comments to those. We have an email address that's established, and that will be communicated on at the open house. It'll be on the website, all the places where people will be able to obtain the plan. We will finalize that sustainability plan and take it to the Park Advisory Board. Our intent is to be there on March 12th, and then we will present the final sustainability plan to Clark County Council, hopefully in April. That's all dependent on their schedules and when we get on and the priorities and whatnot. So, but like I said earlier, our intent is that we will let you know as far in advance as we can of those meetings once they're no longer tentative, but there are the dates are actually set so that you have time. And you can join either online or in person to any of those meetings. So the plan that you read discusses some near-term steps, and I just want to kind of go through those. That we're not going to go through the entire plan because you've already read it, and we want to get into your conversations and hear your thoughts on it. But we thought it would be important to talk about some of the near-term steps. So in the plan, it discusses that we are going to finalize the lease adjustments and revenue schedule for farm services and infrastructure usage, which is something that I think we've already been working on for the past year. And I think you said that you're fairly close to finalizing the lease.
Yeah, all those leases are completed there and they were being
And then we intend to begin the development of the public access trail with the interpretive stops within in construction complete to be completed in 2027. That is on our approved capital plan that was approved in November of last year, 2023. And that process will have a lot of steps in it too. And one of those first steps will be kind of like listening sessions on meeting with farm user groups to kind of understand those safety and security concerns that people are going to have about having public access trails on site, how we're going to keep people on those trails and out of the farming areas. That first phase of trail development might include access from Hazeldale Park, or it might be from the northeast corner, just dependent upon the feasibility of it and how it works out with the hidden property and all of the different things that could be impacted there.
So. Part of the reason that we're looking at making the connection from Hazeldale is the wetland project timeline and their permitting. So we received pretty clear feedback from at least one of the council members that waiting till the wetland project was permitted, constructed, and substantially complete to start doing planning work on making a public access improvement at the farm was unacceptable in their opinion. And so we have a master plan that we're working on, master plan update that we're working on at Hazeldale. And so we're exploring making the connection that's on the Heritage Farm master plan to Hazeldale Park during that process. So.
And we know that there's a lot of apprehension, I think, from folks that are using the farm for having a connection to Hazeldale. And equally, there's a lot of people that live south of Hazeldale that use Hazeldale Park and that really want to be able to walk trails at the farm and have access from the south side. Anybody have any thoughts or questions about that before we move on?
You might have said this and I just missed it. Public information about that, will there be open meetings for people to hear about how that trail is being developed and have input to that? Or
yeah, so
will it be a final plan that's presented?
So through this process right now, we're doing is just the master plan update for Hazeldale, which will give you a conceptual line on the ground. And then if there was something to move forward to construction, there'd be a process where we go out for a 30-60% design. Public open houses is our standard process there. So we'll have a public process for any of those future development projects.
Specific to the trail development at the farm. Yeah.
We'll be working with the farm partners to address the concerns that we can address. It's not unlike a lot of our park master plan processes where we identify partners beyond just the general public that we have individual meetings with will be the same thing.
I know the public's just really invested in the trail, and so I just wondered what the process was for including them, because there has been so much input from the public for the trail.
Yeah, we anticipate, I don't know whether we're going to be talking about that connection at the Hazeldale Master Plan.
I think we're going to show the locations that we think that they will be.
Yeah.
But we won't be talking about what that trail looks like on the farm property.
Okay.
Can you remind me when that meeting is? I know it's been changed.
So it's tentatively scheduled for the third week in March. And if you, I believe I would be contacting you or including you on any invitations for that. And I think I alluded to earlier, we talked about potentially having like listening sessions to start the trail development on the farm property so that we're meeting with those user groups or the interest groups and hearing what they have to say, what their concerns are, so we can consider that as we move forward to the design process.
Other comment other than, are you amenable to meeting with my neighborhood association to give a report on this and updates? That's right in their wheelhouse.
On the farm,
his little park, and they of course would throw in some road improvements on 68th Street.
I am trying to get you an update on that. Okay. I've asked this morning. But yeah, we were always happy to meet with the neighborhood.
They seem to take the information more from public officials rather than me, which is why I asked that.
So they know you so well.
I know that you are important.
We'd be more willing to come and talk about cards and help coordinate.
I'd only ask for like an hour.
Our presentation?
Yeah.
No, I attend many neighborhood association meetings. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Linda gets to talk us in a meeting.
All right. So now is your chance to talk. We thought we would start with giving you the opportunity. You don't have to talk if you don't want to talk, but giving you want 3 to 5 minutes to tell us what your thoughts are on the plan. I put some questions up here. What do you think of the plan overall? What'd you like about it? What did you miss? What did we get wrong? Is there something you think should be different? But I think we'll just go around and give you the opportunity to say what you'd like to say. If somebody wants to volunteer to go first, that's fine. And then after we've had the chance to do that, then we'll have more of an open discussion. We want everybody to have a chance to be heard. Is there anybody that would like to start?
Can you just go over, maybe I missed it, but can you just go over the plan? Like, did you do that first?
No, we were coming in with the assumption that everybody has reviewed the plan, yeah, and that we didn't want to take the time going through step by step because we thought there'd be a lot of conversation.
The people online and haven't probably read the plan.
Sure, that's great.
But
we can quickly go through sort of the structure of the plan.
I have read the plan, yeah. But I have no.
I see the blue tabs.
It would be nice to have an overview.
Do you want to do it?
Yeah, I can get it up on here if you
want to. So you all, as the county scout, in the first presence and how we established the font choice and color coordination. I'm stalling just now for it. We went through our extensive library pictures to find the least worst.
All right, so here's the cover. See?
Yep.
All right. So we start off with an executive summary. We assume that not everybody's going to read all 80 some odd pages here, 95 pages. We talk a little bit about how the plan was developed, the process that we went through. I'm going to move into the plan itself. About how the plan was developed, we talk about the divisions of the plan, the goals, the things that we've talked about at all of our past meetings.
Can you turn to the next page? Oh, we got one after that. Oh, there it is. Okay. So we wanted to make sure that the project parameters were identified clearly in the beginning of the document. So the plan will not, big bold letters there, recommend selling the property. The plan will not remove agricultural practices at the site, and the plan will not eliminate Washington State University Extension Services at the site. But we wanted to make sure of the comments that we did hear throughout the process, and again, clarifying up front that those aren't on the table, period. And then from
you're not the enemy, is that the message?
Well, the side of the beholder, but again, we were wanting to make sure that. We've heard the feedback and continue to move forward with the direction that the people told us and our prior plans and our master plans directing us to do.
I would take that one step further and say that it's never been our intention as staff to make any drastic changes at the farm. We don't want to be the enemy. We want to be a partner. And if we can put some of the unfortunate commentary in the past and move forward as partners on this, then we can address things that that can be addressed that help the farm partners meet their goals and objectives to the greatest extent possible, and help the park district meet the goals and objectives of serving the public to the largest extent possible. It's possible. It's done in a number of different locations throughout the country, and we're not going to try to reinvent the wheel. Design is big borrow and steal in a lot of cases. So that would be our goal, is to continue to build a better partnership and put some of that bad blood in the past.
And what the plan will address should be consistent with what we've been talking about the whole time. It's about the financial sustainability of the farm, increasing public access, use of the property, being consistent with the adopted master plan, and retaining the agricultural heritage of the site. So again, as we move forward, this is the lens that we're looking through as we continue to move through the rest of the project. Fine, which should be consistent with what we've been talking about since our first meeting in this one. Sorry.
No worries. So we discussed the public process. The makeup of the steering committee, how we got to the steering committee that we have. We talked about all the meetings that we had. There's a summary, I believe, of all the meeting notes from the meetings in the appendix. Our public engagement process, the two open houses, the one that we've already had, the one that we'll have in a couple of weeks here. We talked about the community leader interviews that Barney and Warth or Consor did for us, what those questions or the themes that emerged from a lot of this interview, or the interviews were similar. And we have more detailed answers that were provided, and they were provided here to you. Those are provided in the appendix as well. We have some information and themes that came about in the community survey that we did in late 2022, early 2023. We had, I think, 1,100 or so responses to that survey. And so we addressed the themes that were there. And then also in the appendix, we have the longer list of questions and answers that were received. But they were consistent with what we've been working on with this plan and preserving the site as a unique agricultural and educational asset within the community. That we need certain things like more publicity, a better marketing strategy, things like that. And then it also talked about funding sources, which is what we talked about with this plan. We cover a lot of the public meeting presentations that not necessarily that you were a part of, but we've been giving updates to the Park Advisory Board, to the Heritage Farm Advisory Team. Over the time, we've had a couple of, we started in 2022 with the council kind of reaffirming the goals of this project. And then we've given some updates, two updates to the Historic Preservation Commission. All right, and then we will come in and we move into the context. We have some history. We talk about the people who initially inhabited the land before us, settlement of the site, when it became the fourth farm, the things that led up to that, the things that led to the dissolution of that, how Washington State University or Washington State College came about, and the experimental station years, and how the property changed over time, and that we talk about the different, it changed hands within the county. It was initially, I think, a health department property or managed by health department, and came to parks in 2016. we move into the current uses, a lot of this is the stuff that we addressed at the open house, and we discussed, we had different presentations within people that came to speak to us. I think Christine also talked about that, and Justin O'Day talked about the current uses of the site, and as well as Zane, the different farm partners and what goes on here. We also went through and looked at the different studies and reports that have been done on the park in the past, or not, sorry, the property in the past, from the master plan and the master plan update. What is in our park recreation and open space plan specific to Heritage Farm, and how that the goals of that plan impact Heritage Farm. We went through the Metro Center report, which is one of the original documents that we gave you at the beginning of the project, and what those recommendations were that came out of that report. We also touched on the food systems report, because that is a document that we recognize is important to the community, although we didn't share it at the beginning of this project. And it states that in here that it wasn't provided to you as consideration of this. I believe in the operation, I'm sorry, the Metro report, they had suggested updating that food systems report, but that's not something that was within the scope of this project. And I believe it states that in here. The National Registry of Historic Places, we provided the application document, which goes through a lot of the same similar history on the site, and that was provided to you at the beginning of the project. And what buildings are, or what portions are, what is the term that
contributing
to the registry? And I think we need to note, I don't think we do in here, that it's also on the state and the county registries as well. We move into a financial analysis. This is the information that we received from our business services group, where we came up with the around $170,000 a year that comes out of the general fund specific to operating the farm. And that is separate from the extension agreement expenses, which are also shown here, although they are not part of this project for consideration. Those are things that we shared with you throughout the project for context. We also touched on WSU's extension, WSU extension finances and budget, which also are not a part of this, but they're things that you were interested in. And Christine had provided information on that. We thought it was important to reflect that in the plan so that the public and council have another chance to realize the benefit that the extension services brings to the farm and how they leverage that agreement, the funds that they get from the county, and they turn that into $3.80 worth of benefit, more than for every dollar than what the county contributes. We go through farm advisory teams, volunteer contribution information. And I know, Sandy, I think you mentioned I've got the appendix I need to update. I have 22 information that I got from Sandy late last year is in the document here, but the appendix is still the 2021 information, so we need to update that a bit. But we go through the total number of hours and the value of that, the value of the donations that were provided for farm projects, and the amount of food that was produced and where that food typically goes. And then we have a gazillion raspberries there from 1971. Dave really helped with a site analysis here, looking at the site as three different zones of agricultural operations support, fallow land or slopes that are less than 15% but that are unused, and then encumbered land, which are slopes and forested flats, wetlands and buffer zones and whatnot, so that we have a better understanding of the site that's there. And we also touch on the information that was provided by GlobalWise and Hovey, which were the subconsultants that Consor brought on board to look at the regional and county-specific agricultural and economic implications of the site and the benefit it brings to the community. They also touched on the topographic constraints, which we learned about think that was the end of 2022. What was the best use of the site? What were the limitations? What are the limitations on having the entire site farmed versus having different different uses throughout the site? And then the surrounding land use, so we can have a better concept of what drawbacks there are for having an urban farm in the middle of the city, or having a property in the middle of an urban area, an agricultural site. We touched on the different production feasibilities for different agricultural types. What are the best uses for the different types of land and the different slopes that we have, and what are the challenges with each of those? Then we get into the operational alternatives. We revisit the guiding principles, which is what we discussed, were what we were going to create these different alternatives and compare those to the guiding principles from the master plan update that was started in 2019. And so we rehashed those here, revisit those here. And we list all of the programmatic elements. These were the different opportunities or options that we got through our meetings, things that we had discussed, that you had brought forward in the meetings, things that we were listed in the survey questions that were received through the community leader interviews, different suggestions that we received over the course of the project. And we had provided those to you in the build a farm exercise and the workshop. We also touch on the cost recovery strategies, which came from the same points of contact from our discussions here, from the community surveys, and other stakeholders, and what they had suggested. This talks about the workshop and how that workshop ran, and what was brought forward, which were a total of six alternatives from six different groups, five on the day of the main workshop, and then one from LULAC. And it talks about how we had the six different alternatives, and we look at them. You can look at them over here on the chart, and how they all have a lot of consistency within them. They're not exactly the same, but a lot of the same selections are made. And so we tried to whittle that down to three alternatives, which we talked about before, which initially we were calling same same, and now we call enhanced farm. Number two is the NGO model, which I think we all agreed, or you all agreed in the workshop, wasn't necessarily feasible, primarily because there's not a partner that has presented itself at this time that could handle that. And then option three, we kind of is an amalgamation of the six different alternatives that the individual groups brought forward. You look like you want to say something. Okay. And that alternative three we're calling AgriPark. I've received one or two comments that folks don't love that name. So feel free to talk about that here in a minute. We have the two tables. We have them over here. We're gonna look at them all blown up. Beautiful tractors and play equipment and people at marker boards. The cost recovery table. Then we get into the preferred operational approach. Our preferred approach is the AgriPark approach, number three. We talk about why we believe that, what the limitations might be, that there is not necessarily a guarantee that all of these elements could happen, but they could or would be fully developed at any point. However, it would allow for further exploration to try to make those happen. Enhanced farm, we talk about that same enhanced farm model, and that a lot of people, not a lot, some people still have that as their preferred approach moving forward. And while we agree that it meets a lot of those guiding principles, we don't think that it meets the financial objective or necessarily increasing public access to the farm. Or it's not necessarily the best option for meeting the project goals. And alternative two, the NGO managed option, We could explore that in the future if council was interested in it. We would need to issue an RFP to seek a potential farm partner. We didn't include that in the scope of work for this project, but there's a lot of conditions that would be placed on having a potential partner come in and operate the farm. And I think as you all discussed, that there's that would be very difficult to find someone who would be willing to do it and would have the ability, financial backing and ability to do that long term. So that's not the one that we selected as the preferred approach. All right, and then the next steps we kind of touched on a little bit earlier, we recognize that we still have a lot of relationships that we need to build, communication lines with the existing farm partners, and that's something that through the trail development process we'll continue building those relationships and hopefully looking for other folks who can who are interested in looking into some of the options, the programmatic elements in the AgriPark model. We would be finalizing the equitable land lease program that that Rocky touched on a little bit earlier. That's in for approval, those adjusted leases. We would be just picking some out, looking for developing a safety and security plan, like we talked about, would be probably the first step for the trail development or public access improvements portion. Kind of less listening sessions, learning what people or the public has concerns about. What farm user groups have concerns about with public access being increased. And then we will look at other revenue generation options. We talked about the Vancouver Clark County leaf litter compact posting program as a potential option. And I think half of the folks here were supportive of that, but I don't think we listed that.
It is on there.
So that's something.
Right glasses. I just have two pairs, but not the third pair. I can't see
enough colors.
That's something that we would be talking about with Pete and learning a little bit more about what the requirements would be, and how that would fit on the site and work. And we talk about the near term efforts, which I talked about at the beginning a few minutes ago, and I'm not going to do that again. And then we have a world of.
We go back up to 100,000 feet, just for a second. The reason for a document like this is for those who come after us. I can't tell you how many times I try to find something in our file system about why we did something, where we did it. And I find a single sheet of paper like that with no date on it. And I don't know what sort of public process. Yeah, but it wouldn't even have the date on it. No public process explanation, so we don't know how many times we talk to the public. And a lot of people complain about documents like this because they sit on a shelf and collect dust, but when we're all gone and somebody says, why did they do what they did? Hopefully somebody can put their hands on this document because we put it in the right spot.
And you can tell anybody where that spot was.
But if there's no document, there's no hope of finding that document. Mm-hmm. And so I just, as a planner, like to have that sort of, this is why we did this. This is, you know, how we did it. And this is what the outcome was. So just sort of big picture when we're talking about the essence of a planning document. So.
Okay, so I think we can go back to the part where you guys have a chance to give us your thoughts, your committee members, your thoughts, and then we can have more of an open discussion if that works for you, or if you want to do that, just have an open discussion.
Good work, Lindy.
Thank you for coming around.
Okay. You guys. Well, what I see, and you, I know you guys are going to say, well, but everything is so interrelated. Everything you're doing there is related. The farms related to the park, is related to the development, it's related to the businesses on all sides, it's related to the community. it is so interconnected that we will know we're going to miss some people. It's just going to happen. And I have no idea, God's free earth, why we can't get an overflow crowd at the meetings about this stuff. It just upsets me like crazy. It must upset you too. But it's so important to the community. It's so important to our heritage. And we can do terrific stuff on this place. On my North Dakota trip this year, I go to these little tiny communities that have a population smaller than some of our high schools, for heaven's sakes. They can turn out outrageously successful plans with nothing, you know, paper files. If they've got two people in the group with a cell phone, they think they're really doing something, but they can get it together. And I don't know, and I asked and I talked to them, what do you do that's different than what we do? You know, we go online, we send out invitations, we connect up with the neighborhood associations, the business community, newspapers, we do all this stuff, and we still can't get public participation in public projects. Well, we just talk to our neighbors, and I'm like, well, there you go. As a neighborhood leader, I can tell you, you can't get people to talk to their neighbors. They'll go online and they'll communicate with God only knows who on next door and complain about everything, but they don't talk to their neighbors. I would really like to see that January 24th open house well attended. And I will do what I can in my neighborhood to get people off their fannies and get them out there, because this represents such a small percentage of the people that are going to benefit from it. And I just, that's my whole thing. It's such a puzzle. It's like a Rubik's Cube. You can get one side of it just about right, and you think you've got all the angles handled. You know, we don't even talk about the cemetery anymore. That'll be my next year thing. Just kind of heads up. But I think much of our problem here stems from a lack of understanding in exactly what the farm is about. What it has been about is a big thing, but it's not the prior thing. The priority is going forward. How can we get people to put value on it? How can we teach young people how to do stuff? Don't even have to bring the manure into your own yard. You can go out here into 78th Street and there's this outfit and they're going to show you how to do all this stuff. I mean, it's just so frustrating. Such a valuable resource. And I just want us all to work really hard to try to get a ton of people out there for you on the 24th.
Well, can I say, in terms of public engagement, I understand your frustration. We talked about it at Minnehaha.
Yeah.
We did have pretty good turnout at our first open house for Heritage Farm. We did have 1,100 responses to the survey. And I think that's important to acknowledge. That's more than the master plan had. And when I first started here, we had an open house for Curtin Creek that I think one person attended online. And that was an employee who happened to live in the area. So, you know, we've been working in our planning group and with our communication staff to try to beef up what we've been doing. Specific to this, we'll have signs that are out within a 2-mile radius of the property. We'll have mailers that go out. We have news releases. We have social media posts. I have the stakeholders list. There's about 350 people or so that I'm emailing at this point, letting them know. I think you probably all received an invitation that went out to a lot more than just the people in this room.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's just still.
So we are making an effort, and we're also changing trying to do a little bit more at our open houses too. So people, when they come, if they have a decent experience, hopefully they'll come to another one. So we're having snacks, we're having an activity table, so your kid can come and they can be over here and do some puzzles or play some games or whatnot while you wander around and talk to us and ask us all your hard questions. So
public participation isn't unique to this property or this project.
It is
a constant struggle. And the fact that we get almost 50 people showing up to the second Minnehaha Neighborhood Park open house is a testament to all the things that Lindy has been doing to sort of double down on the commitment
to reach out to the public. Some of it's successful, some of it's not, but we're committed to not only reaching out to the obvious members of our public, but all members of the public. To the extent that we've done lots of translation work that we did not require.
Yes, I saw that. That's pretty impressive.
We will be translating the executive summary of this plan into at least three languages. And with the offer to translate the whole document, if somebody wants the whole document translated, we just can't afford to have the whole thing translated for no.
David, do you have Marilee McCall send these notifications out to all the neighborhood leaders?
So we've sent this. Marilee McCall receives all the same notifications, and then she takes care of all of that notification. If I'm working within a neighborhood, then I'll notify the folks, the neighborhood association members that I've been working with, like on Minnehaha, that are within that neighborhood. And Minnehaha is not even in West Hazeldale, but I still keep you on track because you're being checked as you're with us. But we also, just so you know, we've been making like an effort to reach out to underrepresented groups and sending emails, making phone calls. And we don't get a lot of response, but we are definitely trying to make an effort to do that, having meetings, and there's a lot more that we need to do to kind of integrate ourselves with those folks. And integrate is probably a really terrible word, but to try to invite people to participate more. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
I was surprised that the tribe did not step up.
So the tribe did consider, they did participate in a community interview. We will be providing this plan to them to review the draft plan. And I met with a tribal, not a tribal member, but a person who works for the tribe, and that person indicated to me that there's all these different organizations that reach out to the tribe and ask them to participate in this board and that board and to do this and do that, and they don't have enough people and staffing to serve their people, let alone to participate in our meetings. And so we understand that, and we appreciate anything they do to participate.
So I wrote up some notes that I think are probably like the most important, at least they're the substantive parts for me. Farm sustainability and financial sustainability was the very top thing that we were told to address on this committee. And I think in this plan, and it's repeated in the confines of the master plan, and public access was sort of the second one. And despite this being the main goal of the committee and the plan, the financial analysis that's in this is so incredibly bare bones. It is honestly laughably bare bones, and I understand the limitations, but it's really challenging to have that be our goal and have what's shown be a condensed five-year budget that has pretty big broad stroke categories. And then not only that, it really confusingly includes all of these costs related to WSU extension, which is a contract that is completely separate and totally independent of the Heritage Farm. And I know it says in there down somewhere, you know, this is separate, but the way that it's shown, anybody who looks at that is going to be like, well, look how much money they're taking. Whatever, like, it does a total disservice to what we're trying to do here. I don't think it's a bad idea to include somewhere in the written comments or the written text in there, you know, this is a contract that we have with WSU Extension. This is going to remain. If you want to put the total amount in, fine. But the way, I mean, if you move up on the screen on page 23, you are not doing anybody any services the way that it's shown. The way that this plan addresses financial sustainability is that it changes the land designation. But I said that in one sentence, and it's not really talked about in here.
But it doesn't change the land designation.
Well, excuse me.
The zoning won't change.
It turns it into money. Yeah. So that's fine. But that is, it's like, it said sort of in one sentence, kind of, but it's not really directly said. It's, but that's the, like, that is the thing. I just solved the whole plan for you, changed the color of the money. And I get that you need a plan. I totally get that. I also work for government. I understand. But it's been danced around so much that I think you completely missed the point of that.
Oh, I don't think we missed the point at all. It's buried.
Well, it's,
I get what you're saying, Zora, is that this plan is not giving concrete ways of walking the ladder of sustainability. What it is providing is a bunch of, I'm on this food train, so I apologize, crumbs in regards to things, actions in the future that we can investigate to do to change some of those things. And so it isn't robust, and that, and I agree with that. But it wasn't intended to provide all those solutions. It was, and I think through our discussions a long, long time ago, I would call us coming to the conclusion that this property and all the examples that we looked at across the nation were heavily supported. And that was a realization of that we weren't going to have sustainability and it's financially stable upon itself based off of the work product. Because of all these competing needs that it's trying to meet. And so as such, I think that was, and maybe that's in the completion of the document, we didn't get that right in communicating is that, gosh golly, we can't find a way to make this self-sufficient. We found ways to bring in more funds and do things, business practices to make it better. Part of that's depending upon other funds to come in for like a coordinator to market things and bring programming in or to write grants to get other things and other partnerships. So that's good feedback, and we'll continue with that. I agree that having both those numbers out there is conflicting. And I think, as we discussed earlier on, is that our accounting structure was set that that was all in one pocket of money and we were trying to pull it out. This feedback that we're getting, we'll look at and say, well, do we just erase everything that's on the left and the pages after that talk about the contributions, and we just talk about it, and maybe in a paragraph we talk about, we've got this cost center that included lots of things. We pulled out the things that related to farm operation. And maybe that's a simpler approach to get back to the concerns that were raised earlier when we were trying to walk through down to, we're trying to get it to where we're talking about the 170,000 number, and that's what we're focusing on. And unfortunately, when we're doing that filtration, we get stuck at looking at those other numbers. And that is a human nature issue that we'll look back and try to see if we can't do that better, where maybe we have an appendix that has all the numbers. And that's, it's an appendix, it's not page 23.
I'm not done yet.
No, this is good.
So the plan does not define the proposed alternative. It does not define what an agri-park is. It doesn't even really say what you're talking about with an agri-park. It's discussed a lot. I've got all the pages, but it's not defined anywhere. There's these really blurry pages back here that are unreadable that have definitions of all the programmatic elements. But it's not in this category of agri-park. So I don't really know what alternative you guys are proposing, because it doesn't say it anywhere. Other than calling it an agri-park and being extremely general descriptions of what that is. And I think I really appreciate and value the opportunity to participate in this committee. My concern from the outset was that we were duplicating and triplicating and quadruplicating things that had already been done. And I said that in like meeting two, saying after we looked at some of the existing plans, and I get it, again, I got you, we need a plan. But it feels like we've sort of taken the step back and made existing plans even more general to the point of, like, really what this plan is saying is we're going to build some trails, and but those were already in development, obviously. We're going to change the color of the money. And there's other cool ideas, and we're going to put all the cool ideas here, and maybe those will make money. They probably won't, but that's fine. But I wish that we'd had more chance to communicate and discuss these alternatives, these plans. We all put together these sort of alternatives, and then they went into this vacuum, and we had no chance to even talk about what happened with them. And I mean, you know, Lindy, I found two errors in just our groups, which didn't really give me confidence that what we had said was sort of taken into account. But it doesn't really matter anyways, because the whole point of it is we're just changing the color of the money and building trails. I just want you to say that. Like, just say that. But that's what we're doing in this plan. We're going to change how it's done. And I am saying none of this to say anything bad about this process or like what you've done, Lindy. I know writing this stuff is so hard. You get so into it, and it's really challenging. So it's not a criticism about that part of it. I feel like, I guess the takeaway is the financials have to be more outlined, and please define what it is that we're agreeing to, or that the council's agreeing to. I would mention a conservation easement.
The definition is, it's definitely lacking, especially if you can't read the definition of Niagara Park is definitely lacking, especially if you can't read the appendix. We started shoving things into the appendix to try and make the document a link that somebody might actually tell you. And then we decided we'd do an executive session. We can be very much more direct with the definition of Niagara Park by defining the elements that are represented in the infographic. As part of the preferred alternative, so we pull those specific definitions forward. That's a great suggestion. We can't be more direct about changing the color of money. To me, this is just step one in building a sustainable piece of property, a sustainable operation. At some point, we have to move on beyond planning. This is the as a site designer and not a planner. It's taken me a long time to get comfortable with spending the time doing this because I know what we need to do. I'm just arrogant enough to think that I'm the type person to make all those decisions. But we do need to know what the public says. We do need to convene the experts. We do need to do those things. But if we wrote it down, every single solitary thing, and we defined every single solitary thing, this becomes something that nobody will ever think of.
But you understand that.
Yes.
I don't want that either, but you have to at least explain.
That's what I'm saying. We do need to do a better job of reducing the ambiguity in certain areas. But we also need to balance the time that we have to do things and shift to having the conversations about the specific things. Let's get into developing the things more clearly and put this aside as we did that. And now let's actually start working on some of these things. And so that's the sort of balancing point. When's the planning done and when's the doing start? I don't want to plan just to plan. I'm going to do at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would say, so everything that Zora said, I completely agree with. And I understand what you're saying as far as, you know, like we already know what we want to do, and so let's just move forward. But it doesn't say that in here, right? And so for instance, if it's just about changing the money, because I'm thinking about like, so what is the difference between an agri park and just keeping it as is? Because as is, the master plan already says to have a trail,
a master plan, or, you know, so it's like, so I'm just wondering if it's just changing the money, and by changing the money, we're able to do more, right? We're able to then put a coordinator in. We're able to do those enhancements that we already have at the farm that we're not doing. So it's, if it's just that, great, right? I mean, and all of those other things you're saying, so in all those other things that we wish for, that we'd like to be able to do, that could make the farm more accessible. But I'm also saying too, it's just like, then let's just say that what that is. I agree as far as just adding in the financial analysis. The other piece is like, what is the value that not only the county is bringing, but the other stakeholders are bringing? Another, so if we're going to leave in this line item, I agree too, just like, it's a distraction. And you all know how to feel about those added lines with WCU, so we don't need to go into that. But like, if we're really truly going to add in more detail, we should add in the detail around the financial value of every stakeholder that is bringing to the farm. All of the things that Sandy collects every year, we need to be able to have that in here as a financial value. If that's a financial analysis, we need to be able to say, here are all of the things that we're bringing to the farm. If none of these things were here, we wouldn't have all of these wonderful programs.
Is there more that you have than what you've provided?
Yes and no. I mean, I have a deeper dive a little bit that talks a little bit more about the value to the community. I just gave you hard numbers. Mm-hmm. But there's in their reports, there's a lot of times conversations about the impacts in the community, which I think is far reaching out beyond the farm, of what impacts of what goes on at the farm affects people in our community, how it saves them money, how it helps farmers increase their productivity and their economic impact on the community. So there's those kinds of things that are not hard numbers, but they're more impacts.
I think we've also not ever asked it. Right. We've never asked that question of like, what is the value that you bring, in the sense of like being able to say the staffing, how much staff, how much staff is contributing to this farm every mm-hmm. year.
And so that's on a larger thing that doesn't go. I mean, I generalize to keep that at one page, usually in the summary when we talk about some of those impacts, but there is a larger spreadsheet.
Can you provide that larger? I can even provide
you with their individual summaries.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Every one of them has.
Again, it can do a couple different things for us. So from a dollars and cents or that section, but also we can change the formatting and we can have those quotes, those little, mm-hmm. Little moments of sermon, I like to call it. You know, there's just little testimonials throughout that. There'll be a nugget in that. There's going to be a nugget in public comment. There's some those nuggets that can get home. I think some of those bigger issues that aren't about the cost us a dollar to operate and we don't have a dollar revenue in that. So
sometimes it doesn't come down to dollars. I mean, mm-hmm. it is about financials, but it isn't always about dollars and cents. It's about the impact it has on the community and how it makes it a healthier community, or a community that works together, or a community that supports each other. And so what happens on the farm that creates that in pockets in our community? And those are really hard to measure and hard to explain, but yet it's there.
That's the problem with being able to put together a spreadsheet and having actual numbers versus the things that are harder to quantify. It's easy to put a table together, right? And people tend to look at tables and section titles. And so when I was working on formatting this with Lindy, I purposely pulled some things out and made them in that big blue bold text. And so they were eye-catching. Unfortunately, the tables are also eye-catching. So there may be a way to deal with that. And if there are some larger points that the steering committee feels we should make, highlight them and we'll find a way to pull them out like we did with the items that I was trying to capture. This is the definition of sustainability in my mind.
Right.
And if we have to wordsmith some of that stuff, then we wordsmith it. Because at the end of the day, most people are going to read the executive summary.
What they might well do, but what Sandy and Christine are talking about is exactly why the farm has value. It has value because it builds people. It builds people who are self-sustaining. And, you know, you don't have to be Elon Musk to be able to figure that out. And I think that is a huge part of it that's missing. I mean, I know it would make it a bigger document. I get that. But that's why we have search functions. We can find what we need. But the kids that used to come to the farm when my kids were in school here and visited the farm, that was the biggest thing. And it was like months and months and months. I had all of the seeds growing on my counter. And I mean, it was a little fiddly, but the point was both of my kids grow their own food. My son grows his own bacteria to feed some bugs that Lord only knows what they do. But it's all because they got the concept of you start with this little tiny thing and you take care of it and you make it grow and it becomes something that's going to help you down the road. I think that's really important stuff. I think it's worth pages and pages of charts.
So
better.
I don't think anybody will read it.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I mean, it's optimistic to think that you're right.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
means nothing to people.
I'm sorry. Well, if we can boil it down to 500 words, somebody will read it, right? What write a pledge of allegiance to Heritage Farm.
I like that. Yeah.
You know, and but see, Lindy and I worked on this together, writing this, and we're trying to capture what you've said and what's in your brain and what you feel, but we need you to help us cross the goal line when it comes to telling us what you feel and what you want people to know about Heritage Farm and why you think it's worth five times what we spend on it. Right?
Because did we do a video?
It is worth it. Is, well, it needs to go in this document, and the council needs to see.
We have an oral report.
I think the point is less though. Like that's great having that data and or I don't know anecdotal whatever. It's great. We all know it's great. That's fine, but I'm actually talking about these hard numbers, which $1 million over 5 years to the county is like a fleck of whatever. It is so little, but the way that it's presented makes it look like Miss Moneybags over here is just taking all of it. And poor county is left over here to squeak by on $167,000. So that's just like how it's presented. But also then, I mean, this huge bucket of staffing, which
and,
like.
And part of that is we have an internal audience. And when I was given this project, I was told, the farm costs us $700,000 to $1 million a year. Why? Figure it out. And what I found is that there was a commingling of different programs that are being called the farm that aren't the farm. They're extension services.
Like,
and that's
what I think it's fair to say these are the expenses for operating the farm. This is what the county's trying to save. Next table, we also have this other contract with WSU Extension. That's not going anywhere. We can house them in the public whatever building at the county, and it's going to cost like five times as much, I promise you. Or we can just keep them here in this podunk building that.
Well, that's why they moved them every case.
Zora, I take offense to that statement.
We're done. We'll show you a podunk building.
Yeah. We're going to use state of art HVAC that was installed in 2011.
The room where when the air compressor kicked on in the shop, you can smell it in the office.
I put duct tape over my window today, right there.
Yeah. And I just forget you're saying.
I smell diesel fumes every time someone drives by.
I haven't
ever had that before.
I think what Rocky was that the internal audience is the most important aspect of it in terms of how it was written and why, and that's sort of unfortunate as it goes out to the public. But
we have
a good audience in here.
there's a certain audience that nobody else really knows. I mean, that you know who it is, but then when everyone's reading it, it doesn't translate.
This is what you're saying is exactly, and I'll just say this, this is the way that, because Rocky gets to hear me yell and rant, because that's what I do. And then he takes that, what you're saying is the same thing I always say, but that doesn't translate into something that keeps, if we word it that way, we don't have jobs anymore. And so it's written, you've got some good points as to how it could be, we could separate and maybe change, condense something in big bold print that would
trying to make, and then we're doing a good job of this document is agreeing with you.
Yep.
What you're saying is that this site has a lot of value. There is a lot of impact to the community, and here's a way to approach that and continue to work on it moving forward. And sustainability to me is not a one and done as well. It is an ongoing process as well. So I think that's elements in here maybe too steep in the future and not in the concrete. So concrete numbers, anecdotal elements. We're not talking about the whole other value. This is all good feedback for us as we continue to noodle on it and as we prepare for our next public meeting and then actually gather all that information.
If you have 500 words in your brain, write it down. You know why Heritage Farm, right?
Because what audience are we writing that for? Is it going to be the internal audience or the people that Isla and I have to deal with?
I think it would have to walk the thin line that we're trying to walk, right?
We have very few people that show up to meetings because when they show up to meetings, they're shown a document that nobody understands. And that's why I like to have people come to our association meeting to explain those. But I mean that's the dichotomy I see here is that you guys are writing a report for the counselors. Well, we're trying to generate interest in our neighborhoods, and they're not making heads or tails of this report. I mean, I've got another meeting this month where I was going to talk about this. If I showed them up on the Zoom screen to report, they'd okay, what does that mean? I mean, that's kind of where I'm stuck at, is that I've got to translate all that and give it to my neighborhood to show some interest and get them to the meetings. And they're not really, they show no interest because they don't understand any of what's going on. I mean, nobody in my neighborhood is going to be interested in the finances. They're going to be interested in what do they get from it? Well, I mean, walking trails, great. Link to Hazel Park, wonderful. The community gardens and all of that is going to be great, but the financial, not the, it's important, but for the people that I represent, it's not quite as important as it is to the council. So that those 500 words, who are we trying to convince with 500 words? Because I could probably work on something like that.
Yeah,
I'm already from another one.
I just want us to check in about everyone being able to get a chance to be able to speak, and I'm not sure if everyone has.
I was just going to say, I'm kind of going backwards to what Zora first said about there's no definition of AgriPark, and that would be something that we can make it simple, you know?
Yes, that would have to be included.
A couple lines, not, because I went through it and looked, and I, of course, I'm involved in it, and you can go back to the appendix and read, but again, most users are not people reading that are not brand new. Yeah. I'm on my HOA board. They don't do nothing unless you spoon feed it to them. Mm-hmm. You really have to. So maybe just something, a section on this is what AgriPark, how we envision it. It's fluid. We add more things to it, whatever. Something like that.
No, that's an excellent point, and we need to work on the sort of the definition of AgriPark and this preferred alternative approach.
those definitions forward for the elements that we're going to focus on in that version of Heritage Farm moving forward. The other thing that I wanted to comment on is this is, again, the political winds can change. And somebody could come back and say, what are you guys picking on here? Like, we could have new counselors and all of a sudden they'd be like, why did you do this? It could get worse, it could get better, it could get worse again. Regardless of what you think worse and better are. And so this is a very fluid document. And I felt like we did a pretty decent job of saying none of the alternatives that we've put together are entirely off the table because things change. Right? Somebody could come in tomorrow and say, the National Farmer Association X, and I've got a $76 million endowment and I want to run. It's like, oh, an NGO that can do it, right? We just don't.
Welcome, partner.
Yeah, we just don't have that.
We make it difficult to become partners always.
Yeah.
So I think that Mark has left. Is there anybody else that has an opportunity to stand you up?
Yeah, I guess I agree with both what Christine and Zara have talked about, and I'm not going to go with the financials. But the term agri-park, and you already alluded to the fact that a lot of people don't like that idea, and I think we've heard a lot about it not being a park, that it's a farm, and it has a history of doing farming and agriculture and food access. And so, as Christine had said, is like, if we're looking at maintaining that kind of thing, why do we have to call it an agri-park unless it's going to be a park? And I saw a lot of comments in some of the talking about the agri-park about recreation opportunities, concepts for a community park, recreation improvements, things like that. And so those are just intertwined with the whole idea of making it an agri-park and supporting farming as well and farming concepts or agricultural concepts. And so is there a way that we can still follow this path? Because I think the work has been done really well, but follow the path to keep the history of it being agriculturally focused, but also having public access. And I know that we want to increase public access, but the trails will do that. But there's lots of other things that can improve public access that are already being done, but could be expanded and marketed even better. So the tours that we have, bringing youth groups to the farm, harvest activities or other kinds of events and activities that go on at the farm that bring people to the farm and talk about the heritage and about agriculture and food access and healthy living and also having some activity with the trails and so on. But I just felt like, one, the agri-park I disagree with, and Rob, I think, sent his comments in and said there's a concern about people calling it a park and turning it into a park. And agri-park kind of has a merge of the two, but it still emphasizes park. And then having some of the comments, like I already said, the safe recreation opportunities, a community park, those kinds of words, it's not defined. Again, back to the definition of what an agri-park is. And is an agri-park something that you're using internally, or is that going to be changed to be called the Heritage Agri-Park? Or what does that mean? You know, where does that fit in that conversation? Is it going to stay the Heritage Farm? And then we're going to have these agri-park pieces to it. So I think that's part of that definition again, around where do those things fall? And I think if the community starts looking at this, they're going to pick up on those park-like concepts that are in there. And so what does that mean for the Heritage Farm? A couple of questions I had is that when this sustainability plan goes into effect, it talks about going into the Metropolitan District for Community Park. I'm assuming that goes into parks. Will it then fall under the Parks Board? Will there still be a Heritage Farm Advisory Board that will work with things that are going on there and some of the activities that are going on? So how does that fall? Sure.
So it currently falls under the portfolio of the Heritage Parks Advisory Board. The Heritage Farm Advisory Team is
been approved as a thing. There's a list of representatives waiting for appointment. It's not occurred
a
yet.
A year later. Patience, I know.
Not part of the cities, but so there officially there's never been a board for the farm. There was an advisory team. Now there was a creation of that, but it was never official from our records to do that. So the way that we have the advisory team, that's still the intent of doing it. The name, to be honest, it's the poor farm. The Heritage Farm implies that it was like those little signs you get when you're near Heritage Farms, it's been a farm, it's Bob's uncle's farm sort of thing. So the official name, of course, is 78th Street Heritage Farm, but no one ever calls it.
Because it's silly.
But that's its official name. So any renaming of it would be a council item that we go through HVAC for a summary through Parks Advisory Board. There's no intention or plans. I think what we're trying to describe is its use by the Agri Park, and that focusing on many of the examples across the nation that we've looked at have an agricultural production element, an educational and agricultural element, interpretation, and passive recreational or programming that brings it. And I think from the master plan and sort of the things that have been discussed here, it's talking about ways to get from that passive use, someone driving by, making it attractive to come in there and experience it without taking a class, being part of a program, but just be there and experience the landscape from its perspective as an active agricultural farm. It's in like different phases throughout the season. Getting up on that block, seeing the vistas, seeing that different perspective. Everyone in this room has been up on the hill. It's different up there than it is on 78th Street or any of the other parks there on the flip side. So again, having that, those are the things that we're trying to figure out is how do we implement the master plan for those passive recreations. It's not about having a go-kart rink or some sort of real active elements. Now, does that mean that there's some sort of farm-related play stuff that goes in there? I don't know, maybe in the future. But right now, we're just looking at those things that are in the master plan, which is essentially trying to create those how to get people in beyond the gate and see the property without impacting those other operations. And that's a tough balancing act. We've got our work ahead of us as we do move forward. And this is just that thing is we all came into this with, okay, we had a master plan update, didn't go so well. There was some conflict. And this was the strategy to try to bridge that gap, to continue to move forward that adopted master plan and make sure that we're hearing people right. And we're hearing that we are, and that we need to make some improvements. That's what I'm hearing today. And so now it's just a matter of getting that to where we can move it forward. And it's gonna be super fun and frustrating because that's what it always is like. And as we continue to move things, any change of the property as changing the code on the door to building a parking lot somewhere or the trail, it's gonna create feelings on all sides in regards to doing that. And that continues to be our mantra for this is how do we balance all those conflicting things of increasing public access, use, making it the special place that everyone has communicated it is beyond that first ripple or two out. And how do we get the next generation who's not part of Future Farmers of America or 4-H to have those same experiences?
There is a publication that I just ran into in Barnes & Noble bookstores that talks about the hiking trails of Vancouver, which Heritage Farm is included on. I don't know whether you've seen that or not, or whether you were part
of
that.
Is it a little book like this?
It's a little book like this.
Was it called Hike There?
Yeah, something like that.
I know.
I went to the Heritage Farm section, and it basically said, unless you know somebody or you are special person, you can't really get in here, but there is a hiking trail. I mean, that's publications right there, like that. That's how you get the information out, at least to a certain extent. There's ways to do it that I don't think we've really discussed yet, but it can be done.
I'm glad they're publicizing semi-open thing.
I just did a stupid Google search on Agro Parks, and they do exist. They are a thing. It would be simple to go in and find out what defines an Agro Park and does it meet what it is we're doing here as to whether Agro Park is a proper term or if it's just, I mean, to some people it just sounds like a silly name, but I mean, there's ways to approach it. There's ways to approach it where we can, you know, look at it and possibly define it.
It also seems to be more of an internal term as opposed to an external term.
Yeah, the technical term for the property would be if it
was a facility.
Right now it's a public facility, but if we were to blend the funding and generate NPD funds, it would be a community park, would be its classification, but it would be defined as the Heritage Farm, and the term agricultural park is there because what we're trying to do is to continue to communicate that the main focus, most of the acreage there is focused on what you see on that picture is
true.
And then,
but it should be representative of actually what it is, and you need to look at it from the point of view it doesn't meet what other agro parks that exist do. And as you said before, the name of this facility has changed over the years, depending on its use. It's no longer the Poor Farm, although most residents
still call it the Poor Farm.
Call it the Poor Farm. So
you call it that, would be great. Let me ask just one question. The whole thing about ag, but I love the concept. It just sounds kind of cool to me. But I thought in my stupid head that somewhere when I was doing research on this across the country, somehow an agri-park had some sort of a permanence setting that we don't get easily. Did you pick up anything that...
Permanence in regards to living there or...
It seemed to, in the communities that they had something called an agri-park, there seemed to be a sense of, well, that's not going anywhere, nobody can touch it. But maybe that is just their... their interpretation, maybe it was, but you got nothing when you were looking around at other agri-parks that somehow that classification would help us at all in keeping the park or the farm in place?
Well, I think it comes back again to we've got a master plan, we got all those plans, and we're looking to get that covenant that's going to reassure the covenants. And I think the agri-park. There's many different iterations of that, but a majority of them, I mean, there's some agri parks like in Lake Oswego where they have a portion of the old farm has a different entrance. It has a soccer field, has a dog park, has a playground.
Yeah.
It's a park from that. That's not what we're looking to do here. And the master plan would say that. But then you go across the way, they have the fields, they have the house, they have the programming, all the school. Well, they actually have a recreation program or house that they have community gardens, they have leases there. And then when we looked at others around the nation, there was iterations of that where they had, some of them had sort of the master gardener program, community gardens, and that was what it was focused on. Others had trails and other open spaces and a different landscape. It just depends on its size and its setting in those different communities. There was the one out of Detroit. That was an extension services and something else. I think that came through the WSU review. There was a one in New York City, what dates back in the 1600s, that had all that, the farming and those practices that were, I remember it was bisected by a freeway or something like that, that used to have connection to the Bronx or Brooklyn. Anyways, so I mean, there's all these different ways and different funding streams that they get to that element. And I think, and that's where we want to come to the definition, but it's about getting people in the nature
and into the farming, some of the farming activities. So that's the agri park. And how do you get people in
public
there
to access?
Do that?
Yeah.
And is that through a hike? Maybe a part of it is a community garden. Another portion is it having the different programs that we run there at WSU. Yeah, I mean, all those are petals of the flower, you know, to finally get more and more people. Is it just having a counter there? So every time the gates open, we get a counter. So now we have a real data how many people are on the trail, in the farm, in the admin building. You know, there's tools to continue to communicate that we are increasing the, you know, Christine every quarter sends out this little newsletter, and on the side there it's number of tours, people, emails, posts, views. I mean, she has that sort of getting there to communicate. So she's got some data that does it, and we on the park side don't have as much of that from people just in that bling like you're going into a store. And that's, I think, those are those other things that continue to show number of people, another way of showing how we're getting in there. And I think that's those perceptions that it's closed off, it's only for invited guests, is one of those hurdles that we're trying to address through this process. And the perception that it costs $1 million a year to rent the farm. And so those are the two big hurdles. It's already heading down the head. We have a master plan. We have a plan moving forward, and we're not looking to change a lot of things. I think what we're trying to do is come up with other ideas that hopefully help us implement that master plan better and provide different revenues to realize some of the other things that have come up that isn't part of the master plan, but is still part of the master plan conceptually.
Just 1 second. I just want to acknowledge we're a little over 15 minutes over our meeting time, and so we can continue on conversation. But if anybody feels like they have to leave, I don't want you to feel like you're obligated to stay.
Just really fast, I just want to clarify when I say define AgriPark, I didn't mean like generally define AgriPark. I meant we've chosen this alternative, and that alternative includes XYZ elements. So I just wanted to say that because it was much more specific than, I mean, I think there's value in that, but then.
And I heard it both ways. So we had more of a general concept, what is an agri park and what does that mean for site? So I heard it both ways. So thanks. Well,
Matt,
4 minutes.
Matt, did you want to say anything?
No, I'm good.
I just have one general question. We have the time. When you talk about access and increased access, is there like goal for access, or what's your success for access now versus 5 years from now? And what's your thought about, I mean, if you have X access this year, do you expect 10% increased access, and do we need to improve things? I don't know, I just am curious about quantifying access and what that means. And you might not have an answer.
I think that's been one of the bigger challenges in this whole exercise is what does sustainability mean? I didn't like the term business plan, which is what the council wanted, because it isn't a business. And the word sustainability also creates some ambiguity. But the whole public access and financial sustainability thing is hard to quantify. I'll be candid. It's taking the spotlight off of the property. Mm-hmm. If we can move it from general fund to something else, then we're one layer removed from council, right? Mm-hmm. And we can continue to do the things that we do at the snail's pace, where sometimes, you know, in the world of public meetings, it's, you know, cut off your hand to make a point, right? We just don't move that. We can't make a decision and do it. And sometimes in a public meeting, somebody says, just do this. So for me, it's just doing better at what we're currently doing, and being responsive to people who give us direction when they give us direction. And to me, just finding a way to get more people aware of the farm, whether that's through informal use, like people who go there to walk their dog, or go there to walk their kid in their stroller, or people who come and participate in programs. That's increased public access. And again, that's, we should define that. We should do a better job of defining that in the confines of this plan. But we can't just say another 5,000 people a year.
But yeah, you don't do it for your parks.
I can't put a number to it.
No, and I think
you want access to your regular parks too, and you probably don't think that way for the parks. And so, does that carry over to the farm as well? Or,
well, but we do think of that. We think, but we don't. We base it off of what current usage is compared to what it used to be. And so this kind of has to get done before you can really figure out what the value to the community is going to be based on usage. Is that correct?
Yeah, so on the park side here, we don't have counters on all of our properties. Other places have been, we do. And that utilization, the carrying capacity are all things that we're thinking about. Our model for parks here is a level of service, which is number of developed acres, number of acres per 1,000 or 10,000 residents within the service delivery, and a regional park, if we have another ratio there. So that's kind of how we're thinking of it. What I think it would be success is if we have people experiencing this property and starting to engage in programming there that aren't historically engaged. People who aren't using it now, have no intention of using it, are now utilizing that property in whatever format. And so if that's just to take a walk to relieve a little bit of stress, work off that extra turkey that I had, or to go, what is going on here from that experience? And then leads to discussion, leads to those little kernels that then populates all those things. And I think having that passive elements and the other programming, the stuff that you guys have already started with, the tours, talking about the history, having those sort of formalized, that word of mouth getting out. You know, there's that combination of word of mouth and the publication sort of thing that to get that element. I only have so much parking space and so much programming space. And so, you know, there's success for me is that we have to start thinking about how do we increase the carrying capacity to meet that extra utilization while not interfering with the carrots being grown, the experimental mushrooms.
Mushrooms.
Yeah, man. There's
experimental. Are we still in a public meeting?
Okay. So that's all right. I have a couple more slides here, just real quick. Just some information on the open house. It's January 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. You're cordially invited. It will be in the commons area, which is the cafeteria area at Minnehaha Elementary School. We had a couple of open houses there before, and they've been pretty successful. There'll be signage on site. I'm not going to go through everything here because I've already kind of touched on it, but just to let you know, we will be going through introductions. We'll introduce you. We'll have plan development update. We'll talk about the survey because we had the survey at the time of the last open house, and here we'll present the results of that and discuss the community leader interviews that occurred after that. We'll review the plan. We'll talk about how folks can provide feedback, the comment period, those next steps, and then we'll also have a Q&A session. If you will be attending, if you would let me know that you'll be there, just so we can I know that you're there and not call you out because you're not there. Waiting for you to respond. We will have the comment period that I talked about earlier, and these two dates, the Park Advisory Board and the council meeting, we'll let you know as far in advance as we can that those meetings are going to occur in case you want to participate. Those are, again, online and in person, so it's up to you if you want to attend and how you want to attend. And these are just the extra slides I had. That's all I have.
And Lindy, can you make one of the things that, as a neighborhood person, I'm always trying to tell my people about things that are going on. Between Bill and I, there's 35,000 people just in the neighborhood. Just outrageous amount of people. But we never know what's happened at the farm until we read about it the next day in the newspaper. So if we knew in advance, we never know what, for instance, you guys are doing, never know what you're doing. We just don't find out. Even if you tell Mary Lee that, you might as well tell
my grandmother, and she's been dead a while. Anyway, if we have that kind of information, and I'd be more than happy to share my email address with anybody who has anything going on at that farm, and I will just so get out there. And
Matt's working on this year. One of his things to work on is how to get our PIO Public Works engaged with farm activities to address that thing. So it's on our webpage, and we're dispersing it out, sprinkling it out there.
Once we get these things going, Kaylee and I've already talked to the public information team, and once we get things start moving, they're going to start posting the information. But as it is, they're a little hesitant because we don't have any public access. We can talk about how we do, but we don't. You can't just go. And so there's no point in putting it on the parks page for the public until we start making movement so that people can actually, so that it is an actual benefit.
I get all that, but they need to know about it. They need to know when these open houses are. They need to know when the Parks Board meets that might be having the Heritage Farm on their agenda. It's all about public
information. That's all part of it.
There are other ways, though, that people can get involved. Through the volunteering with the food bank, there's all kinds of opportunities. Volunteers, that's the majority of the public that come are hundreds of volunteers that are helping them. So even at that is something that people can get involved for. Any class that's at the farm,
lots of free
you can attend or sign up. Any tour that's free, they can go to any of those tours. So it's all over the place.
And that's really wrong with it. There's no central marketing.
So once we get things start to move, that's what our team can do, because that's what they do, is they blast out information on different websites and different media.
They blast out information for everything that's going on in public works. So there's going to be a capacity issue.
Right.
You can't manage the Heritage Farm page in a way that there's daily information on it.
We talked about calendar.
Yeah, that's all you need is a calendar.
Yeah, and we have a calendar. We just need to start
to share it. So when I send the event,
it's online.
So it's on the kind of calendar.
It's not
right. So,
I laugh because this room and today's meeting is on the kind of website. You can actually find it. And when I checked about usage of this room, I was told, our calendar is never on the public website. And I thought,
plus B1 is not. What was Keller talking about? So, my understanding, and I'm probably wrong, but my understanding is there's a calendar. It's blank, but there is a calendar out on the Heritage Farm website. So, it's there. The framework's there. Now, we just need to collect all the things that our partners are doing on there and start populating that, and then that becomes a mechanism to where others becomes value. So you actually, there is something there when you go to it. So
this is the calendar
on
the Heritage Farm website.
Now so we've created the calendar, now we just gotta work, and now we've got Matt and
things that just came to me the last couple of days
That's been a big part of why I haven't pushed a lot of this stuff forward to Kaylee, is there things that, hey, this is awesome, all five people that are invited
they're open to the public and they have to register ahead of time, but it's an event that
it's at the bottom of the Heritage Farm website,
and we may have to place it at the bottom. But these are all good things that we need to improve on.
And
we call it a D.
Sandy, are you available on that?
The challenge is going to be for Isla and I is not necessarily that the information isn't out there. It's getting our people to look at it.
I want to set up a point system.
I mean, if you have a newsletter, you could just do Heritage Farm activities and have to pay a link, and they can just click on that and it can go train mine to the calendar.
And we do have a newsletter, and it's 4 pages of condensed operations, so I'm still getting people to look at it.
Simplified but appealing.
And also, I went for the MRI yesterday.
You give me one in my face. Is it for bring your pick?
Yeah.
Not good.
No.